Welcome to the Future Forward podcast, an unusual tech dialogue brought to you by Masdar City. This season, we're exploring innovations and technologies of the future from around the world.
My name is Lucy Hedges. I'm the former tech editor for the Metro newspaper in the UK. I'm a BBC TV presenter and a massive, massive tech geek.
And I'm Nermin Negm, the acting head of marketing and communications at Masdar City, a world-class innovation hub and pioneering sustainable urban community in Abu Dhabi.
Now, over this series, we're going to be focusing on the cities of tomorrow, traveling across the globe to talk to the experts who are making it happen in the cities that are changing the world we live in. So, where are we heading today, Nermin?
We are landing in Europe's first ever European green capital, the capital of Sweden, Stockholm. Have you ever been?
You know, I haven't been to Stockholm for, I'd say, over 10 years. I went to visit the Sony Ericsson factory back in the day when Sony Ericsson was a thing and not just Ericsson, to check out how they make their mobile phones. It was cool. So yeah, I'm going way back.
And we
went really early
blast
in the morning.
From the past.
Yeah. So it was so foggy and I couldn't see anything and see the beauty of the city. So that was quite disappointing. But once the tour was over, the fog had cleared, we could see how beautiful the city was and the people as well. So definitely on my list to go back. What about you, Nermin? Have you been?
Yeah, I haven't been, unfortunately, but it's been on my bucket list for ages. You know, All of the Scandinavian countries, actually, they have a reputation of being some of the most sustainability-focused countries in the world. And their cities, you know, they've implemented a range of policies and initiatives that prioritize sustainability. And it's so admirable. And, you know, like, Obviously, being from Masdar City, it's something that we follow as the whole world should.
Yeah, so it's exciting that we have arrived in Sweden. This is where we're going to be today to have a brilliant conversation. And so please unfasten your seatbelts and welcome to the Future Forward podcast. President of Eurocities, Vice Chair and Steering Committee Member of the C40 Cities Climate Leadership Group, and, oh, got to catch a breath there, and the former Mayor of Stockholm, Anna Konig-Jelmer. Hello.
Hi. Lovely to see. What a presentation. Fantastic. You're welcome. I will personally invite you to Stockholm. Thank you so much.
Welcome to the podcast, Anna. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I really, really appreciate your pod and the topics you bring, because it's like caring is sharing. So many cities around the world have good examples to share and to be inspired.
Yeah, well, you were the mayor of Stockholm between 2018 and 2022. You were a huge advocate for equality as well as sustainability. You also sit on the World Economic Fund's Net Zero Carbon City Supervisory Board. Tell us a little bit about yourself and the work that you do.
So I used to be a mayor, and I really, really was engaged in the ESG topics. So both sustainability, but of course S in the ESG as well, to have an inclusive city, equality. That's why I also really market the city as a woman's place where you can have balance, both with the urban environment and the nature, but also it's a good balance between working life and private life. So just to see these values that will get more and more important for talents, because I think that is what the city will kind of have a competition of, the talents of the world. And then you really need to work with the values that your city kind of stands for. And today I'm been investing a little bit, but I'm also in a board for some tech companies. And of course, they are presenting solutions on equality with data, gender-based data, but also climate. So they could, for example, be platforms where you trade circular materials.
Wow. You know, Anna, I've checked out your CV online and your impressive bio. You know, it's quite inspirational, the list of achievements that you have under your belt. And I'd say, you know, based on your current roles and your previous roles, you've had quite a heavy focus on innovation and sustainability when it comes to, you know, future-proofing the city and, you know, creating these opportunities for growth and quality of life for citizens. So it's really admirable, the kind of things you're doing. I think it's also quite fair to say that you're someone who is dedicated to improving the lives and conditions of your citizens. And you're clearly someone who's more than familiar with all the challenges that Stockholm faces and the enormous, you know, potential and opportunities of the city. And am I also right in saying that during your time as mayor, Stockholm was awarded the smartest city in the world? Is that right?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Very, very impressive.
Yeah. Yeah, but it, You always have to be like on top. So even though we were awarded, I mean, it's still kind of a smart city 1 year ago is perhaps. So you always like need to push the organization and the stakeholders to be still continue this innovative mindset. Mm-hmm. And now I think we are in a stage in the development where it's going more fast than ever. So you really need to like, how will we use the artificial intelligence in one way? But truly, you can really digitalize your city and bring the public values for a citizen-focused and centered policy. And I think that to bring them on board, the citizens, the other stakeholders, through technology, that could really create kind of vibrant, livable cities that can attract both visitors and people to move there.
That really is the beauty of technology, isn't it? It just has the real power and potential to really kind of streamline a city strategy or bring people together, like you say, and implement all these strategies to ultimately create a city that's forward-thinking and future-proofed.
Yes, it's for us, it's about being proactive. To be better in understanding the services for the city's perspective, like what should we do when and what prioritize should we have?
Yeah.
That could actually, for example, real-time data bring that the city is not like, you know, the waste management. It's not just one time a week with the bins. It's actually they are sending the signals like now it's the time, this is the priority, and it just help us to get a more efficient service for the citizens. Just one example, but I think it's getting us to be more proactive, a step ahead, and it's really needed now if we talk about sustainability, yeah?
Yeah, well, it's interesting that, you know, you just mentioned big data. You know, Stockholm is the first ever European Green Capital, which was awarded in 2010. And it's, of course, on course, to be a fossil-free city by 2040. So the target is 100% renewable energy, renewable electricity production by 2040. So what you're focused on achieving here to help citizens in the day-to-day, you know, is nothing short of exciting, if I'm being honest. You know, so talk to us about the importance of real-time data and what Stockholm is doing. You know, you just gave us that example, but is there anything else that will kind of give us an example of how Stockholm is using this kind of data?
I think that one example is iWater, that we have a collaboration with the universities, and then we have sensors in the water system, in the pipes, and then they can also send signals like it's a leak or leakage, or, you know, this is bacteria in the water, or something is like you need to interact and intervene. And we have in the city, I think, 20 to 25% leakage every year. And of course, that's just not a sustainable way of treating the water. So that helps us also to reduce the leakage. Another example is our public, because it's a quite cold city. Winter time, and it's still like, oh, I don't want to look outside today because it's snowy, it's freezing, it's cold. And of course, I mean, the public facilities like schools, we used to have like to check, monitor the ventilations in the building every third year. But now with real-time data, we can have sensors that could also send signals about temperature, about ventilation, air quality, and actually brings like better working environment for the teachers, but it's also help us save both cost and energy cost, and it's actually also saving energy. We can see that the energy efficiency has really increased during the sensors in the public, like in every classroom we have sensors in some school, and that helps us to create like a real-time feedback loop as well. Or like if it's a school kitchen and at the freezer is something wrong, then it's also sending signals, so it's will reduce the food waste. That's another example. And also traffic lights, where we have tried, you know, the system with the real-time data. And I think that many cities perhaps have this today, but it's actually also, instead of it's like a program for the traffic lights, it's actually controlled by the real-time situation. And then we can see that in some areas, like the efficiency of the public transport had increased with 40%. And you can also manage it through air quality. through like how is the air quality today, in which streets, and then you can use the smart traffic lights system to also to manage the system. So you can see that it's so much like we have to go from some parts like monitoring once a year or every month to all the time. And also that it will correct itself and send like priority signals.
Yeah.
What should we do? Like, what should we manage first? And it's quite expensive as well. Sensors, if you like, we used to have like air quality sensors in some areas, but it's very inefficient because you don't get a mapping of the whole city, every street. So today you can also have like sensors on the buses. So you can also, you know, both see the temperatures, but also the air quality, and then you can monitor streets to street, not just like a single place once in a while.
Yeah,
this is so fascinating, Anna. I mean, speaking about energy as well, I understand the city also harnesses the Earth's natural heat. You use geothermal heating and cooling, is that right? And that way you provide a sustainable and efficient energy source for a number of the buildings around the city.
Yes. Is that correct? We're trying to see like a circular system as well, both with cooling and heating. We also do it both when it comes to that area, but also when the district heating, where we use biofuels. And then we can also have connected with data centers. So the heat from the data centers comes from the district heating, and then it cools down, and then it goes back to the district heating. So it's just like an ongoing system where cooling and heating is within the same system. Where we, one example is that we try to use as much heating where it is as possible. So we, for example, our black fiber with broadband, because it's get a little, it's warm in the pipes. It's, we have schools that today use that energy for their system, for their heating system. So actually, the school's heat comes from the black fiber, but also geothermal and district heating to reuse energy and to reuse cooling. So some of the data centers actually warm thousands of homes for Stockholmers.
Wow.
Yeah, me and Lamine are just like, so wow, just, you like, know.
Yeah. Like you've already mentioned so much technology already, like so many different areas.
And yeah, we knew Stockholm was, you know, up to date with the latest tech, but we didn't know this much. But we've only really just scratched the surface of what you guys are doing there.
Yeah, I think just like every city should see what do they have, what can they use, and how can they connect the system. I think that's also the conclusion from the World Economic Forum when it comes to energy, that like, make it a holistic system and make it a system that are connected. So it's actually just reusing the heat, reusing the cooling, and you have different kind of facilities in your specific city, but you just have to see how can we have a systematic approach.
It's
That's
such
a
fantastic alternative to kind of meeting these growing energy demands. It really is brilliant to hear about that and hear you touch on that. I just want to go back a little bit just to the big data, because I know you and I had a chat before we did the podcast about, you know, back to air quality and the introduction of the congestion charge. You know, using that big data, you introduced the congestion charge and it brought about a reduction in asthma in different parts of the city. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about that?
This was a controversial kind of question we had a couple of years ago with the introduction of the congestion charge, and we had a referendum. But I think that in the end, when you actually see the data, what happened with children and asthma, you could see that it was a clear result that the asthma amongst children declined or decreased within the city. So I think that every parent now feel that, of course, we should have that kind of steering mechanism. But I'm a little bit jealous about London that, you know, the city are in charge of the both public transport and the revenues from the charging system and congestion charge. And we don't have access to the public transport. That's the region, and the state takes all the funding for the congestion charge. But then you can actually like lower the price for public transport if you are a smart city, I would say. And then you lower the price of public transport, and then you increase the cost of fossil fuel cars and buses and lorries with the congestion charge. That's what how you should steer it, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, in Scandinavian countries, the rate of adoption they have for people taking on alternative ways of sustainable transport is really admirable.
Just to follow up on that, that's the next step perhaps for cities, like smart cities, to see that mobility is a service. And if you can connect different ways of transport and you have different fees perhaps, but you can the public transit buses or the tube system, but also like sometimes, you know, rental bicycles or scooters. So you can just like have a holistic system of mobility that you can see what's the most efficient way of taking me from A to C, for example.
Yeah. So on the topic of public transport, I'm going to segue in nicely to my next question. Can you talk to us a little bit about, you know, your public transport system, and in particular, green energy? I know there's some really fascinating nuggets of information to come out of this question. So I'm going to let you take that answer now.
Yeah, so it's a region who's in charge of it. So this is not my expertise, but I'm very proud to say that Stockholm was the first capital region that had 100% fossil fuel public transport, fossil fuel free public transport. So it's also now biogas, the buses goes on that, and we produce the biogas from waste. So that's also a more circular system. So you can see the marketing on the buses, like your waste, your food waste is actually, helping the public transport to be, yeah.
That is a brilliant use of waste, isn't it? A fantastic use.
Yeah. And next way is like electric, on sustainable and renewable energy, of course.
Yeah, I can't wait to visit and try the smart bike sharing system. The UAE as well has a lot of bike sharing options, and we at Masdar City, we also have e-scooters to share, as well as Teslas, by the way, which you can download an app and you can, you know, take a Tesla for whatever errand you need to run, bring it back, and other electric vehicles. And it's really interesting how Stockholm is, you know, all of Scandinavia, as I said, is really keen on electrifying their transport.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, I think that's the next step. Like, we can see that more and more cities also focus on the really difficult areas like construction, and to have also both the private transports, but also, you know, all the construction site to be fully electric. So what we said, like, we will procure only electric vehicles after 2030. And it's also included like digging machines or heavy traffic, because we also want to steer in that. And we think that the procurement power is very strong for a city or a region, and you can use that. But others, I mean, this will be the demand from the citizens to use electric, because the noise pollution as well, of course, for the climate and air quality, but so many citizens also suffer from noise pollution, especially if there is a big construction site nearby. So that will also be better quality of life.
I think Sweden or Stockholm, you know, has always been a pioneer in this area. I think, doesn't it go back to like the 80s and low carbon public transport was first introduced back then? And, you know, fast forward to today, and, you know, Stockholm wants to provide the most sustainable public transport in the world. You know, it's quite a huge goal. I think in a little bit, it puts the UK to shame a little bit, if I'm being honest. So the entire underground system runs on green electricity. You've got buses running from waste. So your sustainability is important at every level. Your depots and your stations are heated using green energy. It's really, really quite impressive stuff. You know, when you consider that Stockholm's catering to what, about 800,000 people using public transport on a daily basis or weekly basis, you know, we're talking about catering for quite a huge amount of the public. Very impressive stuff.
Yeah, and if you look at the inner city, like the central part of the city, 8 out of 10 journeys are by foot. So it's a very walkable. I mean, I often walk because it's so, it's everything is close. You just have to kind of just prepare how long will it take to walk there and walk there. But you know, the walkable city is also very important.
Yeah, well, at Masdar City, we've purpose-built and pioneered this wonderful sustainable urban community in Abu Dhabi. We have one of the largest clusters of LEED Platinum buildings in the world, and we're currently developing 4 net zero energy projects that are due for completion in the very near future. Similarly, the city of Stockholm is developing the new Eco Quarter, which I'm not going to try to pronounce.
And
I'm gonna
Please do.
It's the Stockholm Royal Seaport, I think. the Stockholm Royal Seaport. And I'm actually really excited to hear about this, Anna. Tell us about it. It's rather than being purpose built, it's repurposed. Can you explain that to us?
And you know, I actually lived there as
well. Oh, how wonderful!
Oh, wow!
This was really an effect after the pandemic because it's for me. I was, you were outdoor all the time after the pandemic, and then I discovered this wonderful area, so close to nature, but still this kind of industrial urban feeling of it. So I moved there, and I'm just such an ambassador for this area. So I will show you around when you come to Stockholm.
But it is
an old kind of really industrial area with like the bricks and the the area is excavated from all the industry, but it's an old gas plant. And it was shut down 2010, and after that we repurposed this like industry area with a lot of pollution in the ground to this new district near the water and totally like focused on sustainability, natural based solutions, and it's 12,000 it was new homes and 35,000 new like working places. And you can see that they're always testing new things, so you like live in a living lab. Because there's always kind of a new innovation going on where they are testing kind of the future of food or just not biodiversity. But it's a really engaging area because it's not finished. It will continue to have this kind of research and innovation implemented in it. So one thing we do is that we have mass consolidation. So we really try to not transport all the waste when we build, and we perhaps also demolish some buildings. We do it on site. And then they also test how can we find methods where it's so not so much noise pollution, less traffic. So we gather everything at the same place, and then we reuse the material. We have system that could also the excavated spoil can also be cleaned and reused. So from this day, 12 million tons of material has been excavated, and 100 ton of the material on site has been reused in the district and in new properties. So it's even though I live really, really close to where they're building the new buildings, I can't see so much transport. And Sweden's first construction heavy truck was also introduced here. I think it was last year, and goes on electric. So it's quite, it's some traffic, but it's quiet. You don't really notice that this enormous site is developing. And then we're trying also to bring in, the culture. So one of the ABBA members also will actually be in charge of the culture scene in one of these gas buildings. So it will be just to attract, the 5-minute city. That's what we're trying to build. Not only 50-minute city, but the 5-minute city. But a lot of kind of that the renewable energy, every property has renewable. We have a special plan for biodiversity. So it just goes on and on with all these, test bed for built material sustainability in within the property what is it the property market or the property the district.
From someone like me who lives in London, you know, to hear about Masdar City, to hear about, you know, this incredible testbed that you're living in, Anna, you know, just really blows my mind. And it's such a great example of using old infrastructure sustainably. And I think a great example of just how, you know, living in cities can potentially be more energy efficient. And it must be so exciting to be on at the foundation level of something that's really going to have such amazing implications for the city moving forward.
Yes. Yeah, it's such a smart system, because if one of the aims is to reduce the traffic, for example, or the transport, for it's also included waste, and we have vacuum system for waste. So you never almost see any waste collection. It's actually just, you know, you put it in one place and the vacuum pipe take it away, and then it's just they pick it up, but just like not as often if you had a more traditional system, and everyone is involved, like sorting waste and plastic and so on. So it's quite, you know, everyone is very aware of the environment.
I'm actually really curious to know, how has the city of Stockholm engaged with businesses and residents to encourage sustainable practices? I mean, tell us about the strategies that you've used or the city uses to successfully promote sustainable behavior, especially when it comes to using technology.
Yeah, so we have some examples where we have, working with advice, or, you know, online, where you actually can get help, like how can I be more energy efficient? But it's of course also to bring in the data, and then you can follow your own energy consumption. That could be a way, and you can nudge people also to be more cautious, but also to have this kind of plant bed where they can also grow their own grocery,
produce.
And people really love that. So gardening
who want
for
to,
people
grow their own
in
food.
Yeah. So you can see a lot of these going on, that people are, you know, it's a strong community feeling there. But also to try always to have this, I think we can do even more when we have better feedback loops with the citizens. But they are definitely like on board and engaged and in different kind of, because they need to sort the waste. It's also, if you're going to redo your kitchen, you can't just use any material. So it's actually also, you get help from a specific platform to find like, okay, this is the environmentally friendly materials you should ask for when you install your new kind of, it could be kitchens, it could be other things in your property.
So there's, what it sounds to me, you know, you keep talking about mentioning the word community, there's this real sense of support here at every level, from citizen level to official level. Everyone wants to get involved and ultimately sign up to the same agenda. And it's really refreshing to hear that this, you're so forward thinking compared to other territories. When it comes to technology, it's about keeping on top of the latest technologies, keeping on top of the latest innovations, because ultimately that is what's going to help you move forward. And if you don't invest in those technologies, then how are we ever going to kind of, you know, bolster our plans for the future?
Definitely. And you have to engage people.
Yeah, exactly. It sounds to me that the citizens are very engaged.
Yeah, because nowadays, when you know that everything is getting much more expensive, it's inflation, it's really tough for families now in many, many countries. But what I hear from some politicians is that, okay, keep on doing, I mean, we will not ask you to change how you eat or how you transport yourself, or, you know, you don't need to do any energy efficiency. We will do this, because they are kind of afraid that the citizen will turn back on them. But I think that if you see like really modern cities, the citizens wants to be engaged, wants to be included. So they're searching for a leader who show, okay, we have to go here if it's like net zero, and we want you to be a part of it. And you are crucial when it comes to consumer power or your behavior. And if you help us to achieve this together, we can actually create this fantastic, livable, vibrant place with clean air, clean water, more green. So I think that's the thing, as a politician or as a leader, you have to communicate. We don't want to hear that, okay, just, you know, keep calm and carry on. because they are afraid that, you know, to include the people. And I think that is very important in this kind of areas.
Yeah, and I think as well, you know, people want to feel included. They don't want to be barked commands at and be told what to do. That sense of inclusion really helps drive that interest and just helps drive everything forward, because it's building that community like we've just been discussing. Yeah. So moving on, the KTH Royal Institute of Technology in Stockholm is the place of research and education in engineering and technology. I think I read things like cleaner steel, more eco-friendly nappies, energy efficient water consumption. These are just some of the areas that have really garnered like widespread attention. So what impresses me is how focused you guys are on working across different departments, you know, from police, universities, and the steering committee that you have in place to develop these changes for the city. So how important is cross-communication in making these things happen?
I think that's crucial for the future leaderships of cities or any organization, I think, to really get the best team for the challenge that you're going to face. And for me, it's been just so much value to working with the researchers, because they have also the data, the technique, and we have often the challenges, but we can also very fast, in some cases anyway, scale it or implement it or test it. But it could also be businesses. So for me, it's been in a platform where we can actually say, you know, we have all these challenges. And is it possible that you, through our partnership, could help us to create smarter solutions? It could be, you know, sensors that better monitor the elderly, but it could be as like in the built environment as well. But I think we need to work really, really close with the universities. I was actually there yesterday, because we are building up, kind of focusing on how can we get more girls in school to want to study technique and math and to be engineers. That's still a problem that we haven't succeeded that yet in Sweden. So we really like have cross collaboration now for the next generation. That's just one example. Like, can we do a mutual mentorship program and so on? So, but it's still like you need to bring them on board. Sometimes cities will say, we don't do research. But that was like, it was old leadership. now it's you need those kind of to just to give the baseline where we are today, to see if the measures works or not as well. Build up digital twin to just to test things before you do this huge investment. That sometimes goes wrong. So work very closely with universities like this.
Yeah. Well, ultimately, it's a team effort, isn't it? You know, to really implement that change, to get everyone on the same page across all sectors of any city to be involved, you've got to ensure that you're all working towards the same goal. And that really, it sounds like you guys are definitely on that page. So Stockholm and Sweden, you know, they're global leaders in environmental sustainability, you know, despite being so ahead of many other countries and cities, you know, as discussed over the last 30 minutes. Do you feel there are any areas where you need to improve on? You know, what are some of your biggest challenges?
Oh, many. Yeah, all the time. I mean, we're not finished. We have problems with, you know, sometimes I can see in my country, they still demolish buildings. That's not good for the environment. Like, try the circular system. Still, like, a lot of construction waste is seen as waste, regulated as waste. That's also a huge part of our emissions. Negative auctions on CO2 emission needs to be at place in Europe, I think, before we can have this bio-CCS, the carbon capture. That will also do, I mean, that will make us also reach the Paris Agreement, I think. That's like a main part. But as well, of course, like energy saving, because we live in a very cold country and it's not so much sun during half of the year. So if we have solars like all over, so how can we storage them? I mean, you can imagine that's like one, or the wind, like that's also an argument. Like, what will we do when there's no wind outside? So it's that kind of like energy storage that will be the, I think, and where should we have like the infrastructure for charging infrastructure in the city for kind of heavy traffic? That's also another one big challenge.
Yeah. So it's interesting.
Wow, this is also amazing.
Yeah, the energy storage conversation, because I think when we were talking again before the podcast, Anna, about sand silos, which admittedly is something I hadn't heard of
yeah,
before.
Yeah, I actually want to. I want to understand this better.
That was.
I think I get it, but can you? Can you explain it again to us, Anna?
Yeah, we don't have it in Stockholm, but I saw it from World Economic Forum. So my suggestion is that I think they have written a report or have example where you actually storage energy in sand. Huge sand silos, very efficient. So there are cases like that. We haven't used it yet, but I mean, this is just the beginning of new solutions for energy capacity. And I know that we have many companies here based in Stockholm that works with batteries and trying to make them more sustainable. Northvolt is one, but they actually show me like the next generation of energy storage. And then you can connect if you have like solar on your house or in your windows or in your building, you can actually have this kind of capacity soon that will also make them, you know, both into the grid, a more flexible market, but also that could be there like an energy grid that you can use even when it gets darker and colder. So I think I'm quite optimistic actually when it comes to the storage, but we don't have it in place today. So
yes.
That's why solar is a little bit challenging for us.
Yeah, and even though, you know, you don't have it in place today, it's thinking towards the future. These are the things that you can implement in the future. And what's really interesting about the ideas or the what you just mentioned is that these things once upon a time were unattainable and unachievable. And now the pathway is clear and you can see a goal and we can achieve these things. And just things like sand silos and just things that like that just goes to show just how forward this technology is now going.
Definitely. That's what impressed me every year, every day.
Yeah, Anna, what advice would you give to other cities that want to follow in Stockholm's footsteps in deploying technology to promote sustainability? How did you guys, I mean, it's just even hearing you speaking about how you're not done yet and you're still studying more things and you believe you're not doing as well in certain areas, that is so admirable because already you're at the forefront of sustainable urban development. Already you're doing it right. Already the whole world looks up to you and other Scandinavian cities, yet you're still trying to improve. So I think, you know, do you have any thoughts to share on how other cities can walk in your footsteps?
Try to have this collaborative environment. Like I see a really interesting trend now amongst the property owners in our city, and I think that's scalable to other cities as well. Because if we're going to procure or we're going to buy in all this material that are circular perhaps, or that it's fossil free and so on, really sustainable, there will be today it's not enough. The producer can't produce all this. So actually, you can see that companies that used to be competitors now are collaborating to do this group purchasing organizations for sustainable materials. They come together. So they look at what's the best, most innovative, you know, material on the market. Let's invest in new plants or new industrials so we can purchase more. So they share actually also information that used to be quite, you know, secret or but they understand, should we reach this, we need to collaborate. So I'm thinking like, let's put in the cities and the regions there as well. So have kind of a database where you can actually share an open platform of, okay, if we're going to buy in isolation, for example, or it could be on the transport side, you can choose like solar panels. Which, you know, supplier has the most efficient, most sustainable product or service, let's go together and invest so they can scale up. That is an interesting trend where competitors trying to collaborate. And I can see that among cities as well. So just try to, sharing is caring, you know. So it's this kind of mental attitude is really fruitful, I think.
Yeah, and incredibly admirable as well, you know, just sitting here for the last half an hour listening to you talk about all the change in policies and technology you guys are implementing into the city. And, you know, hearing from someone like yourself who's on the front line of implementing this change and is in the know of all this technology. And it's been a real pleasure finding out just how forward thinking Sweden and Stockholm is when it comes to urban sustainability. So I want to thank you, Anna, so much for imparting your wisdom onto us today.
Yes, it was such a delight, Anna. Thank you so, so much. I really
Thank
enjoyed this
you.
conversation. I think all our listeners will be, researching about the things that you've mentioned and the amazing projects that you're working on. Thank you for your time.
Yeah,
Thank you for a
absolutely.
fantastic conversation. Yeah, I'm looking forward to come to Master as well.
Oh, you must. You absolutely
Yes.
must. I'll definitely reach out to you, and we can plan a visit for you here. We're doing some pretty cool things as well in the city, and
I
it
know.
being new, and like I was mentioning, it's purpose-built, so we do have a great deal of flexibility in piloting new technologies and seeing what is new out there that can be implemented. So I'm pretty sure you'll be impressed when you come.
Yeah,
Fantastic.
and of course,
Oh,
Nameen and I also
great.
want to come to
Great.
Stockholm, so there's that trip as well.
Yeah. Yeah, you're gonna have to take us on a
Come
tour.
to my house in the Royal Seaport.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that'd be amazing. Okay, on that note, remember, guys, you can hear all of our episodes in the same place you heard this podcast.
And join us next time when we will be landing in another future forward city. Until then, goodbye.
Bye.